there's the saying in Juneau, and I think in a lot of other state capitals, that the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. In the first two episodes of Paying Dividends, we talked a lot about what Governor Mike Dunleavy is proposing, an austerity budget with sharp cuts to schools, healthcare, and ferries so the state can afford $3,000 permanent fund dividend checks. In the Capitol, people like to refer to the governor's proposal as his request, because really it's the House and Senate that decide how much to spend on each program, and they're free to accept or ignore the governor's advice. In the legislature right now, the committees that are handling the budgets for each state agency don't even use Dunleavy's proposal as a starting point. They actually start by asking how much each agency would need to sustain the status quo from last year. But if lawmakers reject Dunleavy's budget cuts and decide to spend more money on government services, then how much cash is going to be left over for those PFD checks? I'm Nat Herz, and this is Paying Dividends.
Welcome to Alaska. Here's $1,000.
Well, it's about time, but why?
When you collect that check, it is your share as an owner of the resource.
And you know, people are like, do you really get paid for living there? And you're like, yeah. You know, you look back and you're like, dang, what'd I spend my PFD on?
If we don't make a change in the permanent fund, it's gone in a couple years. It's just gone.
My goal is to pay a full PFD and to go back and make sure that Alaskans get the PFD that was also cut.
In this episode, we go back to the Capitol to talk to more lawmakers about what next year's budget and PFD are actually going to look like. While Governor Dunleavy was elected on pledges to pay big dividends while cutting state government, his detailed proposal to do that is not exactly going over smoothly with lawmakers, even those in his own party like the Republicans who control the Senate. We're going to hear directly from two of those senators in a minute, but first we're going to talk with Andrew Kitchenman, the Capitol correspondent for Alaska Public Media and K2. He's been covering budget hearings in the Senate Finance Committee.
What we're hearing out of Senate Finance, and that's the key senators of Bert Stedman and Natasha von Imhoff, the co-chairs, is they're using phrases like step down and using the PFD as a shock absorber, with the idea that this is the first year of – Stedman's been saying a 2 or 3 year process. The House, we don't know as – they haven't been as specific, maybe because their session got started and their coalition is newer. But the general idea is that as each very unpopular proposal comes up, a lot of legislators also express their displeasure with it.
They've been kind of going through like department to by department, and as that happens, it's sort of like, oh, this is what cutting the ferries would do, and this is what cutting healthcare would do, and this is what would happen if we made gigantic cuts to the university and schools.
Yeah. The university is a good example. We've got Fairbanks Republican Senator Click Bishop. I talked to the other day about it, and this is what he had to say.
It is a non-starter for me. I think we all need to take a step back and look at this problem and let data drive the discussion. And I just don't think there was a lot of thought put into this cut.
With Click Bishop, I mean, he's a Republican senator who's kind of taking a shot at the proposal to cut the budget from the Republican governor. We've been hearing about the need to cut government from Republicans for the past 4 years, but now that they've finally got someone that's talking about doing that, they're actually saying that that's not what they want. Is that what's happening here? Are they realizing that government is maybe already as small as their constituents want it to be?
Well, I think they were expecting that when big proposals came down, that there would be more of a policy rationale behind it, which is a little tough because the governor basically had a little more than 3 months from after he was elected, a little more than 2 months after he took office for when he put out the proposal. So we've got all these major, major cuts, but we don't necessarily have like a vision for the future of the school, of the education system, or of the university, or of any of the major cuts.
It's just we need to hit this number in order to make our budget pencil out. And so we're going to take that money away. And then as far as what that actually translates into, as far as a loss of programs or services, we're not really sure about that, or actually that might be a lot worse than what people actually want?
Yeah. I think that in a sense, there is a series of sort of impossible choices that the legislators have set up for themselves, and they thought the governor was in the same position where no one wants to cut the PFD, but maybe you cut the PFD if there's no other options.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of lawmakers that ran for election in November on, we are going to fight to keep the PFD at its historical formula, you know, sort of as large as it has been in the past. How has the tune changed, or has it changed, from those legislators that were promising to go to the mat for the PFD?
Well, if the tune's changed from the legislators, and I think it has, then it's also changed from the public. They were responding to a public outcry before, and now they're responding to a different public outcry. Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki is among those who are working out what their constituents want and how to achieve it. Here's Michicki.
What that means is we have to work together, and that means that it doesn't get to be exactly the way I want it to be. And I'm not going to quit, and I'm not going to go home and take my toys with me when it doesn't work out. Politics is the art of what's possible.
Michicki was someone who ran, you know, he almost lost his primary to a nobody, to a guy that raised no money, had barely any political profile, and was basically just promising to repeal criminal justice reform, SB 91, and to pay a full PFD. And so after Michicki almost lost that election, he came back and said, I hear you, constituents. I promise to try to repeal SB 91 and pay a full PFD. But the stuff that he's saying now is like, he's saying that basically, I think there was a quote right after Dunleavy's budget came out that if we want to cut the budget as much as Dunleavy's proposing so that we can pay a full PFD, we're going to have to, quote, live like cavemen. So it sounds like he's really kind of reckoning with, okay, this trade-off here is maybe a little bit more stark than I thought it was going to be. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that and he's trying to communicate that to his constituents. And so it's this dialogue that legislators are having with their constituents where the constituents didn't want one thing and they didn't want another. And you know, there's a rationale for that, which is that people weren't facing giant budget cuts last year, but they were facing giant PFD cuts. So, you know, it's kind of like the messiness of listening to, trying to understand exactly where your voters stand.
So, and then one thing that hasn't come up a whole lot necessarily, but, you know, Dunleavy has been really adamant that we're not going to spend from savings anymore. That's not sustainable. But lawmakers seem like, and Dunleavy wants to fix this budget all at once over the course of 1 year. It sounds like some of the legislative leaders are saying that that is too extreme and too draconian to just phase this in all at once without really understanding what the consequences are and how exactly this is going to play out. So what is the discussion about sort of phasing in cuts over time and how we do that if we're not going to balance the budget in 1 year?
You've got Senate Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman from SICA, longtime defender of the permanent fund. And so he's been among those who've weighed in on protecting savings. And I talk with him about that.
I agree with that premise. And I want to work with them to make sure that we fix the fiscal situation and protect the permanent fund and keep the Marine Highway running at the same time. So it's going to be quite the juggling act.
He's basically saying he's talking about Dunleavy there, correct? And he's basically saying that sort of there's a tension with all these things where, like, if you're not willing to cut spending and you're not willing to cut the permanent fund dividend and no one is talking about taxes, so that really leaves like savings to tied us over until we can figure out how to make one of these other levers move, right?
Yeah, which isn't that surprising. I mean, it's all the state's ever done, really. I mean, all the state's ever done whenever it's had a problem throughout history is go to savings. I mean, maybe I'm overgeneralizing a little bit, but at least in recent history. And it's true, Dunleavy talked about not reducing savings, and his budget doesn't touch those two big accounts, the permanent fund earnings and the constitutional budget reserve. But his budget does dig into two other savings accounts. So his budget would actually spend about $350 million in savings, and for a legislature that's already kind of been used to spending savings, I think it's going to be hard to not look back in that direction again.
Have you heard more talk about oil taxes since people have seen this budget and seen what it's going to require to balance the budget without oil taxes?
As far as like leadership, not as much. I've heard grumblings that if there's a perception that the public is flat out rejecting the governor's approach, then maybe the governor himself may ultimately have a degree of openness to oil taxes that he wouldn't personally have to a lot of other different kinds of taxes. But, you know, whether that all happens in the next couple of months, I think seems to be a real long shot.
Andrew Kitchenman with K2 and Alaska Public Media in Juneau. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Good to talk with you, Nat.
So now that we have a good sense of where Senate leaders like Stedman stand on Dunleavy's proposal, we wanted to hear from a couple of senators who are a little more on the fringe of the budget debate. First, I talked with Mike Schauer, the Republican just elected to the seat that the governor once held, representing a huge swath of the Mat-Su plus Valdez and Delta Junction. His district is one of Alaska's most conservative, and Schauer supports putting the PFD in the Constitution, as well as a constitutional amendment to limit state spending. Schauer's on the Finance Committee, and I started by asking him if he'd be willing to compromise by accepting a smaller dividend than what Dunleavy is proposing, if he could get it into the Constitution.
The answer to that, Nat, is it depends. If it was a true 50-50 split and it was going to be protected in the Constitution, I would look at that very seriously as a possibility, because then it's off the table and we can't touch it in the future, and we can't allocate as government officials whatever we want to take. Like last year, the SB 26 formula for this percent of market value, this POMV, originally had like 70-30, 70% of the government. I was never going to vote for that. And then they just, in my opinion, later they just want more and more until it was gone. If it was going to be a true 50-50 split, which would originally drive the dividend down a little bit to like $2,400 or something like that instead of $3,000, but it was going to be a true 50-50 and put in the Constitution so we can't touch it in the future and it protected the fund, I think that's something that's reasonable to look at. But it's a two-way street. I'm not going to, you know, take something like that with no guarantee in the Constitution. Statutory would be, that just wouldn't work for me.
So when it comes to the governor's budget and the way you guys are handling that in the Finance Committee, the governor's been pretty clear that, to pay the PFD at the historical level, that gives us a $1.5-ish billion deficit that we either have to cover with new revenue somewhere or $1.5 billion in budget reductions. And the governor has sort of obviously gotten all in on the budget reductions. Can you talk about how your constituents are reacting to that? Are they on board with cuts the size of the ones that the governor has proposed in order to pay for a full dividend? Or do you think that there's been some backlash to that even in the deep red Mat-Su, and that, you know, there either needs to be a conversation about a smaller dividend or about taxes on something to help cover that gap and sustain what we're doing?
I will answer that this way. I think that, first of all, we have had in my district, as you said, very deeply red, and we have had more support for the budget and reducing state spending than we've had for keeping the budget as it is, you know, et cetera. So in my district, it still heavily outweighs in favor of the permanent fund dividend as it is, the payback, and reducing government spending. And to be quite honest, I am elected to represent the majority will of the people in my district, assuming that they are good common sense things. I think reducing government spending to a balanced budget is a common sense thing to do. That being said, this is back to compromise. I'm one person, you know, out of 61. So I am not necessarily going to get my way on everything. And if I had a perfect, you know, day, I might do things differently. to achieve the end game. But I understand that I have to work with 60 other people, and I'm going to have to find a balance that works. I like his approach, which says that we have to have the conversation, because if we do this in little incremental steps, history has shown us it never works. We don't get there.
One of the biggest pieces of the governor's budget is a really major cut to a constitutionally required service, which is education. I mean, are your constituents on board with a cut that large to be able to pay for a full PFD, or is that a conversation that is that, or is that a proposal that actually is causing some of your constituents, you think, to have some second thoughts about that?
I think everybody took a deep breath when the budget came out, because they needed to go, wow, that's not an insignificant change. And I will tell you, Nat, that still in our district, my district, District E, still overwhelming support for Dunleavy, because we voted for him overwhelmingly in our district, and still support for his plan to reduce government spending. There certainly was an outcry within the first week or two after the budget coming out, because many groups got involved and there were some very organized groups. You could see it when a whole bunch of groups that never show up to town halls all of a sudden show up. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because people are getting engaged in their government and in this discussion, which we should have had years ago before we spent our savings down. Partying it up on the credit card, and we just kept doing it. We should have been doing this years ago, and we could have had a much softer landing. So I am still seeing support for Dunleavy's plan in the positive, not the negative, in the MATSU, or I should say District E, because we go beyond that.
Are you going to stand on principle here and hold out for the PFD to be as big as it should be under the statutory formula, or do you see your job as kind of advocating for that in the context of your role as a finance committee member and a majority member that has to get stuff done?
Look, I'm going to use every tool I have available to me to achieve the end goals I would like to see. Close to a balanced budget. That doesn't mean it's exactly where Governor Dunleavy's budget is now. It just means close to a balanced budget. A statutory or other dividend that made sense, but it would have to be something I saw that was rock solid. Because I'm certainly not going to go back to my district and go, oh, I gave up on the statutory dividend. You're going to get a $1,000 check this year. That wouldn't be acceptable to me either, because, by the way, the law doesn't say that and hasn't been changed. So to answer your question, like I said, it still depends, because I don't know where that's going to be. But I will use every tool in the toolbox I have, politically and otherwise, to get an answer that's going to be acceptable to me, to my district. And then hopefully, and I have to do this as well, is something that's going to work for the state, because you have to be able to think up and down that spectrum. So that's a little, I'm not trying to obfuscate the answer. I'm trying to go, right now, much of this depends on the negotiations we come up with and the proposals that come forward, because I can't answer it well, or I can't answer it definitively until I see those, other than to say that, yes, I'm going to fight for what I said I would, which is a full dividend, whatever that ends up being, and looking for constitutional changes that I think are going to make us structurally sound, more sound than we are now, that right the ship and put us on autopilot. Because what I don't want is things that happen because of a cult of personality, because of Mike Dunleavy or Mike Schauer or anybody else that's here. I want things that happen in the future to be because we made good substantive changes that put us on autopilot, so we don't have to be around for these things to work. Because what I'm here for is my kids and my grandkids. I'm here to make a safe, sustainable Alaska that they want to be in and live in. And so I think there's some things we need to do better to get there, personally.
That was Mike Schauer, a new Republican state senator from the MATSU. Next, we're going to hear from Bill Wilkowski, a Democratic senator from Anchorage. He's also on the Finance Committee, and he's been one of the most vocal advocates for paying the dividend under the historical formula. He even sued the state 3 years ago to try to block the governor at the time, Bill Walker, from using his line item veto power to reduce the PFD. But he lost. As a Democrat, Wilkowski hasn't supported the type of budget cuts that Dunleavy has proposed, so I asked him where the money should come from to pay for the larger dividends that Wilkowski wants.
I think you clearly continue to look for cuts and efficiencies, and I think the legislature will find several hundred million dollars in cuts and efficiencies this year. But I think we've really got to tackle the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that is oil taxes, once again. Are we getting our fair share for our oil taxes? And if you look at the revenue sources book, there's a host of different oil tax credits. We've got $800 million to $1 billion in refundable oil tax credits that are purely discretionary, but the legislature has said we're absolutely going to pay. And I find that to be a striking difference in how we treat oil companies versus the people of Alaska. Because here we have, on the one hand, a statute on the books for 30 years that mandates that permanent fund dividend checks be paid to the people of Alaska, multiple statutes that say that, and the legislature now for the third year in a row has ignored that statute. And on the other hand, we have a statute that is purely discretionary for issuing oil tax credits to the oil industry, and the legislature is doing backflips to make sure the oil companies get funds. So we keep hearing people say, oh, well, that's a debt. We've got to pay that. Well, if that's a debt, why isn't it a debt to the people of Alaska for their unpaid dividends? That's a mandatory statute.
Philosophically, I see where you're coming from. I think practically, both of us know that the governor and the Senate majority are completely uninterested in or seem to be uninterested in a discussion about oil taxes, which leaves you with cuts to government or cuts to the permanent fund dividend to fill the gap that remains if we're not willing to talk about oil taxes, which seems to be the case this year. So acknowledging that both of those options are probably pretty detestable to you, like hundreds of millions in cuts to education or substantial reductions to the dividend, which one of those do you accept this year if you have to accept one of them?
I don't accept either one. I don't see why the people of Alaska should be left with that false choice. I don't see why a small group in the Senate should decide that we have to make this false choice.
I just want to emphasize that, I mean, it's not just the small group in the Senate majority. It's the governor of Alaska that was elected by the majority of Alaskans.
Well, the governor of Alaska was elected by a majority of Alaskans on promises that he made to pay a full dividend, pay back the dividend, constitutionalize the dividend, and also have no significant cuts to education or health care or rural Alaska. Those were promises that he made. So if anybody's going back on their promises, it's the governor. You know, he's the one who's put us in this situation. And quite frankly, I said this during the campaign. I said he has no way to meet the promises that he's making. Many people said that. And now he's sort of backing the people of Alaska into a corner. He's the one who has to budge on something. And I would suggest it's oil taxes.
You've had this proposal to put the dividend into the Constitution, but that idea has not seemed to have gotten much traction in the legislature. Why do you think that has not been a more popular idea in Juneau?
I actually think it is getting traction. I think that is something that people are starting to talk more about and looking at as a solution. I think what you're going to see as this year, the next 2 years roll through, is there will be proposals, significant, serious discussion about putting the permanent fund in the Constitution and allowing for a portion of it to be used to pay for government services. I think that is where this debate is headed.
Once you at least sort of agree conceptually to putting the dividend in the Constitution and that it's going to be protected in a more permanent way, are you willing to can you be flexible on the size of the dividend that goes into the Constitution? I mean, do you think that's a conversation that's fair, that if we're going to sort of guarantee some level of dividend, that you know, maybe that dividend that's guaranteed is smaller than the historical formula, as long as it's still sort of robust in, you know, by someone's calculation?
I think that's a discussion worth having. I think if we could get to a point where there was certainty being provided to Alaskans that they would get a dividend, that they wouldn't have to come every year and plead with the legislature to give them their share of our oil wealth, I think the people would be willing to accept providing some level of the funds for government services in exchange for certainty. I think that's a discussion worth having.
Do you have a sense of why folks have been so resistant to including that as part of the discussion up to this point?
I think the resistance to putting the permanent fund dividend in the Constitution is the fact that special interest groups and some lawmakers want to use the whole dividend, quite frankly. They want access to the entire permanent fund dividend. They would like the ability to use more of, take more of the dividend and use it for government. I think that is the fundamentals of this debate. I think you can go back historically, literally since the permanent fund dividend program was created in 1982, literally the next year there were proposals to eliminate it, to get rid of it, to have that money go to special interests, to have it go to, you know, everybody's got an idea of how they want to spend that money. And I think until we constitutionalize it and have some sort of framework that the people can trust, that this debate is going to continue to rage on.
Bill Wilkowski is a Democratic senator from Anchorage. And that's it for this episode of Paying Dividends. Special thanks to Daniel McDonald and Noah Hansen. This podcast is a production of K2 and Alaska Public Media. It's edited by Jennifer Pemberton and Annie Feit. If you like what you hear, rate us or review us or tap the interesting button in NPR One so more people can find the show and learn about this thing called the PFD. We're also online at k2.org/paying dividends, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. I'm Nat Herz. Thanks for listening.